Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Normalized Crime. I'm Eric.
What's going on? Berto here.
And Berto, we're back with our first interview. So who are we going to hear from today?
So today is going to be someone. He's a friend of mine. He's a good friend of mine. And he was a king from Chicago. So, you know, he has a lot of firsthand knowledge, man, just about all the characteristics of the neighborhoods over there and just the overall environment, man, what it's like to live and be brought up over there. And he's got his own unique story of how, you know, he ended up becoming a king and ultimately, you know, being exiled. So I think he's got a really unique story. It's probably just the tip of the iceberg that we cover, but definitely going to be a good interview. I think Eric, when I did this interview, I talked to you about it and I explained, man, you know, the story that he's going to talk about as far as being, you know, almost betrayed by the guys, you know, I think it hits home for me because, you know, it's almost like what you feel like, but he was actually living it in the street. You know, I think a lot of times the guys that end up, you know, going whatever different ways from gangs, you know, they typically, it happens, you know, prison, you see, you know, other guys' true colors, or it's a situation like that. But for it to happen in the street, I think it really, you know, it really, really changes how you think about, you know, how you think about all these organizations. And just, it's not always about some guy that went to jail and went to prison and that's why he's bitter towards a gang type of deal. You know what I'm saying? It really happens. People really have these situations happen, you know, in real time while they're out there. And so I just think it's unique.
So let me just make sure I'm understanding what you're saying. So are you saying that you kind of feel like this story aligns with your story? It's just that to him, it happened out in the street, whereas you kind of went through a lot of this after you were indicted and put into the prison system. Is that kind of
what you're... Well, not me personally. I'm just saying in general, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, if you look at just people who are on every platform now, you know, a lot of people, they ended up making a decision to, you know, pivot in their life for whatever reason. Usually happened when they went to prison. You know what I'm saying? It usually surrounded some sort of decision there. You know what I mean? And they break away from the life. My guy, his name is Steve. You know, we're just going to call him Steve. When he made his decision to break away from the life, it was while he was actually in the street. And so I just, you know, I likened it to kind of he's a different, you know, he's the exception, not the rule. You know what I mean? And so I just think it highlights that. It wasn't nothing particular, any parallels to me, nothing like that. Just in general, you know.
It's just something that you can really connect with.
Right. You know, I think the betrayals are obviously going to be different. You'll see, you know what I mean? You'll be able to see the different betrayals. But overall, it speaks to what I talk about all the time, you know, hypocrisy and favoritism and all the things. And they, you know, those things resonate in different areas and different hoods all over the country, you know? So I just think it's a good one. And I think everybody's going to enjoy it.
So just one question along this lines is that you did mention that he's actually from Chicago. Can you share a little bit? How do you know this person? Did you do time in prison with him, or is this just somebody you've met since?
Yeah.
Getting out of prison?
Yeah. So, he's a little bit younger than me. So he, you know, the generation he was in would have been different, you know, obviously because I explained before about, you know, having being connected to Chicago and how that dynamic works when you're active and on count. And so, obviously I had those ties to Chicago when I was active and, he wasn't around at that time. He wasn't the king yet. So I wouldn't have knew of him at that point in time. I did end up meeting him in prison. So, that's kind of where we, you know, obviously when you're in prison and, you know, you tend to be around people who are from similar situations, similar backgrounds, because when you're in the feds, man, you're going to run into all different kinds of people from all over the country. So you tend to gravitate towards people from similar backgrounds, you know, similar areas. It's just natural. And so, yeah, that's how we ended up, you know, being cool. And then, obviously you do enough time with people, you know, you get to know each other. And so, we just became, you know, good friends. And obviously we understood each other's different paths in life. And so that's kind of how I met him and developed a relationship with him.
Cool. All right, then we will. And just so everybody is aware, this is a two-part episode. So there is going to be more to come in a future episode. So, but with that, we'll take you into the interview.
Enjoy. Today is a unique episode, kind of a treat, man. We get to bring one of our story podcasts, one of our stories from the podcast, full circle. You know, we get to actually bring somebody who was a part of one of the stories that I explained where I wasn't actually a part of, and they get to come on and kind of verify and clean up some of the details. You know, you got to remember when I told the story, it was on the episode called Kill on Sight. It was a lot of generalized storytelling because I wasn't there. I didn't have the details. You know, the basic premise of it was the obviously, you know, it was about the context of how, you know, how badly you can be treated when you're on the outside of these gangs, you know, even if you were on the inside of them at one time. And so that was the context. And I tried to share that message. But now to be able to go back and revisit that is going to be pretty cool. But first, you know, we should probably get some background information, man, and just cover an area like Chicago or Indiana. We can kind of go over where this person's from. I'm going to protect his identity at this point, you know, and as well as the story that I told and that he's going to reemphasize. There's probably going to be the protection of some identities. For whatever case, it works better that way. And we'll just call my guest Steve. I know him for a while. I used to call him Steve Jobs because he's in love with Apple products, which I am as well now. But so without further ado, I'll introduce my friend. What's up, bro? What's going on?
What's going on with you, man?
Good, man. So, you know, on this podcast, there's a lot of people that listen for the stories. There's a lot of people that listen for the message. And there's a lot of people that probably listen for both. And so I think it's cool, man, that we do all of the above, that we bring a story, we bring a message behind it and reemphasize it. And I think with the new look of this podcast, being able to bring different voices on, different people that have been through similar situations from all areas of the country, I think that's what's going to kind of separate, kind of how the podcast was run to how it will be run in the future. And when I interview, I like to start off with basic information, man. So, you know, from my understanding, you were raised in Chicago, Indiana area. You know, a lot of people don't realize how close those borders are. And maybe you can just give us some insight, man, as to where you grew up and that kind of thing, and what kind of environment you were raised in.
Okay, I grew up in Chicago, and Indiana. And the part of Chicago I grew up, it's really close to Indiana. Like, it's so close, there's a street that literally separates it. Like, there'll be gas station stores and houses on one side of the street, and on the opposite side. There's also houses and gas stations and stores, but one side is literally Illinois and the other side is Indiana.
Right. And
there's so many entry points of in it to cross over. Not only like through an expressway, but you can literally cross the street and you're in Chicago, and then you literally cross the street like and you're in Indiana, like I just said. But there'll be like a bunch of different entry points. So people cross over all the time. And I grew up in the hood. I grew up in a criminal environment. I grew up in Lankin Hood.
And
ultimately, I became a Lankin.
Okay. When I think to paint a picture for the listeners, I came from Milwaukee where neighborhoods were, I mean, they existed, you know, when I first started coming around, and obviously the generation before mine, neighborhoods existed, but they became kind of extinct, as time went on through my era, and I think, you know, police presence played a big role in that. But for people to understand, like, Chicago is a whole different animal, and I'm guessing Indiana is probably similar. You know, when you say you grew up in a King neighborhood, like, that's like really a King neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like, there's no other gangs there. Like, that's what you're growing up around. You know, in comparison to where I was growing up, it's kind of the neighborhoods. Yeah, they were dominated by certain gangs, but the neighborhoods aren't really, really as well established as these ones in Chicago. I mean, these ones have been around for, you know, tens of years, probably, you know what I mean, for a long time. And so when you grew up and you're growing up around these kings, you know, what was there a deciding factor that made you want to become a king? Was there something that happened that kind of led you towards them? How did that happen?
It's like you said, like, in Chicago, it is a little different. There's a, like, it's infested with gangs, right? And a lot of different gangs. Like, you could be like in some areas, one block is one gang, and then literally the next block over is another gang, and then literally the next block is a different gang. And they'll be all beef, and they'll all be at war with each other. And in some areas, you know, one gang might control three or four blocks, and then two or three blocks over, there's another gang that controls another two or three blocks. Where I grew up, the Kings, the Lion Kings, they controlled maybe like three or four blocks, but it was a strong hood, right? And I just grew up watching them, seeing them. I think a big deciding factor for me, like, I knew my father, but he wasn't really around. He had like his own issues, like in terms of drugs and alcohol. So he was just like also a missing figure in my life. And I think, like, anybody that grew up without a father figure, or like really with their father not there, like, probably could relate to this. Like, as a kid growing up, as a teenager, you're always searching, like, subconsciously for fathers, and you like end up collecting father figures. Also too, I think people relate, like, just like the desire to want to belong and want to feel like accepted. Like, I had them three issues. Like, I was collecting father figures. I wanted to feel belong. I wanted to feel accepted. And, you know, the Boy Scouts weren't they didn't have like a heavy presence in my neighborhood.
Right.
The Latinos did.
Right. Right. So let me ask you this, bro. Because this is a good topic, man, and it's relevant because I feel like it's probably what a lot of people go through. A lot of younger guys go through. I guess the main question is how, like, just trying to think from average Joe standpoint, how do you go from being a normal kid to deciding to be involved in extreme violence, you know, in every facet? You know, like, how does that transition happen? Like, what is it something that obviously, you know, you learn over time, or is it something that,
from what I've seen, what I've experienced, right? When you grew up in the hood, bro, you see a lot of violence growing up. You know what I mean? Like, it's a natural thing. Like, I don't live in the hood right now. I live in the suburbs, but all my life I lived in the hood. So, like, seeing the difference is like every day, you know, crackheads, every day, you know, gang members. You see shootings, you hear shootings, you hear about them. So they become like a normal thing, right? Growing up, like, you might be scared when you hear the gunshots or something like that, or when you see the drug transactions, or you see someone getting beat up, but it's like a regular thing. And then, like, over time it becomes cool. And then when you personally see like people that are a little older than you that you look up to, like, you're like, damn, I want to be like this person. I want to follow this person. You look up to them. You admire them. So, and you know they do these things because you either seen them or heard they done these things, right? And in terms of, like, getting involved, like, that's a huge factor right there. Like, you admire these people. You look up to them. You want to be like them, right?
Right.
When I was a king, right, like, I became a king. Like, the kids that turned me a king, they were only 2 or 3 years older than me, right? They were kings. Right. But when I finally turned a king and I finally went to the meetings, right, the older kings that were like in their 20s and 30s, they, what they do is they set up incentive structures, like all the kids that are like 13 to like 17, right, that are land kings, they'll tell them like, and this was an incentive they put that was put on me, like, for every land king or future, a future is like like someone you recruit that's basically on like probation status, and right, once they pass the probation status, they become land king. So for every member you recruit, because let me backtrack a little bit, which I'm pretty sure your viewers know, you know, you got to pay dues every month to be a land
king, right?
A membership fee, right?
Right.
Well, they put these incentives in place to in order to grow the hood, like the king, the older kings know they have to recruit young, very young kings, and you got to groom right. them into becoming good kings, right? Or into yes men, whatever the case. Well, they put the incentives on the younger kings to go find like their other childhood friends or the other kids they go to school with to recruit them. And they'll put the incentives of like, you'll have to pay no fees, or we're going to give you extra weed, or we're going to give you extra this or extra that. So for every member you bring in, you get like a bonus, whether that's
right.
like paying dues or like you're in good favor with someone you might look up to, or they might give you extra weed or money. You know, they structure it differently, but basically that's how that animal works. It's almost like a recruitment center.
Right. And how old were you when you became a king?
When I became a king, I was 13.
And right. Same thing.
There might have been like 10 other guys that got recruited by the same two guys. All in my
group. So they weren't paying dues for a while.
Yeah, they weren't paying dues for a while. Like, and they were getting like whatever bonuses they got, like some free weed, maybe a few ounces, maybe
right.
something, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting topic in general, bro, is because I think I get a lot of that from, you know, I get a lot of emails, and, you know, sometimes it's more, there's a lot of shock value, and people don't understand. They think, man, how do you, that's like why I asked you, like, how do you transform? Right. And because me, for example, like I was always really good in school. Like I was literally like, I fell off a cliff, man. Like I was doing really good. I was in sports. I was, and then everything just kind of, you know, went left. But, you know, and I echo the sentiment, what you share, bro. And I agree, you know, you grow up and you see violence, you know, even in your home. You know, I grew up in domestic violence situations. You know, you see violence in school. You obviously get into a bunch of fights, you know, growing up. Like, that's just a way of yeah. And so the propensity for violence is always there because you've seen it and you know it. And so then when you get into a situation where you're around violent people all the time, it's not as far-fetched as people think, and
like
that doesn't make you,
your first reaction is to run. You're more comfortable with it. You're like, yeah,
right. It doesn't make you a bad person, bro. It doesn't make you evil. It just means that you adapted to that environment. You understand what that environment creates. And so, you know, it's refreshing to know, bro, like, you know, and to be able to be able to say like, man, it's not that you're breeding a bunch of stone cold killers, man. It's not that. It's just that, you know, people adapt to what they're around. People adapt to what they have to deal with in life. And I'm sure that's what you've done. That's what I did, you know? Yeah. So, all right.
I will throw though in like, and one part though, they do like, the reason they go after young kids is because they have no mind. You know what I mean? They kind of have like a blank space.
Right.
Like it's rare, very rare for them to, very rare that I've seen for a 25-year-old Latin king to become a king at 25. You get what I'm saying?
Right. Right. So. Yeah, no, definitely. I feel like the impressionable kids is way easier to mold. You know what I mean? You know,
and they go after kids that are kind of like come from a broken home, that are broken themselves or are searching for to belong, to feel accepted.
Right.
Usually
right.
The people that fall for them type of tactic.
Right. And so I know there's probably tons and tons of stories that we could get into during your time as a king. And I'm sure maybe at some point we'll revisit that. But what I want to get into is I want to get into because you have a really, really unique situation, bro, that I never came across of anybody before. And that's of somebody that basically decided to not be a king anymore. You know what I mean? Like usually that only happens after people get indicted or, you know, all the outside things happen. And then that choice happens. Like for me, you know what I mean? Like I went through a bunch of shit, but you decided that in the street. And so I think that's an interesting place to start, man, because where the relationship went from being really good to really bad happened, I think is something that, you know, most people, they probably overlook. You were a rare instance where you seen bad shit happening to you, around people and to people that you cared about, and you decided that wasn't for you anymore. So can you kind of run down to me the best you can as far as the thought process of when you decided, you know what, this isn't me anymore, what age you were, and kind of how that went?
Okay. I became a king when I was 13, right? I was a king for 6 years, maybe a little over. But by the time I got like 17, 18, I really didn't want to be a king anymore, right? Like, I guess just got tired of like the lifestyle. I had went to jail one time, and that really kind of like, it sounds fucked up, like maybe like I'm scary or something, but that really had like an impact in my life. Like I was like, yo, I don't want to do this, right?
Right.
Like this ain't really for me. Like I don't want to end up in prison for the rest of my life or for a long time, right? Because when I got locked up, like I had done like maybe like one or two nights in juvie, like two or three times, but I got lucky. I did a shooting, and I shot someone with some other guys in a drive-by. And everybody was 18 except me. I was 16, and I went to jail. They went to prison. They ended up in prison. They got that real time, and I got like a few months, right?
Right.
And so like I basically like dodged the bullet, and I was like, damn, like I could have been in the joint. You know what I mean? And like at the time, like I don't know how everybody else feels about this, but like I was terrified to go to prison. Like I was down to shoot at people. I was down to shoot people. I was down to sell drugs. I was down, but I was like, I don't want to go to prison. Right.
Right.
And like, that was like a wake up call for me a little bit. So, but at the same time, I was scared to like tell the kings, like, yo, I don't want to be a king anymore. Right.
Right. And because, I mean, I think it's worth mentioning. There's no just walking away or getting blessed to walk away.
Yeah. It's really hard. Like it's really rare. Right. So I was like, I didn't have the courage. I didn't have the balls to do it. So I was kind of like around the bush a little bit, like kind of like, I don't know if I want to. And so I kind of just stood in. I try to like work. I try to like do things like that to try to stay busy, have excuses, whatever the case. Eventually, you know, I kind of fell back into the mix once I had got out. I tried to stay away, but I really couldn't because they make you go to meetings. They make you do a bunch of stuff, right? But the whole time I was a king, though, like when you become a king, you usually become a king with a group of friends, right? Like it would just be you. Like it'd be you, Bobby, Jimmy, and little
right.
Jimmy.
Right.
And someone else, right? Like it'd be like four or five of y'all, maybe 10 of y'all all become kings. You guys all went to like second, third, fourth, and fifth grade together, right? So, and you guys all got recruited together, right? That's basically my story too, right? So you develop this bond with these other kids, with these other individuals before y'all become kings. So when y'all become kings, you know, this bond doesn't go away, right? This friendship doesn't go away. Well, I feel like they felt the same thing, right? And but they really didn't say anything, right? Well, I like I said, I didn't want to be, but I didn't have the courage to do it, right? So I kind of just stood in, kind of just played my part, right? Well, long story short, like in a short period of time, maybe in like a year, like things like really, really changed for me. Like I went to jail when I was 16, got out when I was 17. And then from like 17 to 18, I kind of was just like trying to do things like trying to avoid going back to jail, but still being a king. Cause like I said, I didn't have the courage. Well, anyways, long story short, one of my friends that I grew up with, right. He ends up hitting a lick. Right. And we're just going to call him. We're going to call him Johnny.
Okay. Right? Okay. Before we get into it. Right. So, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of, hit people that listen to our podcast, but, when referring to hitting a lick, basically they did a robbery, right?
Yes. When you hit a lick, it basically means you committed a robbery, you jacked someone. Well, his lick, Johnny, and mind you, Johnny, he's like 2 years older than me. He was one of the guys that turned me a king. So I looked up to him. I admired him. We were like best friends, bro. I'd die for this dude without a question. I'd do anything for him. And I saved his life before he saved mine before. And what I mean, he saved my life or I saved his life, like a guy pulled out a gun on him and started shooting at him and I had to shoot him. Or vice versa.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, literally, there's two situations on top of my head that literally happened. Right? So, long story short, he hits a lick. He hits a lick for 500 pounds. Right?
Of weed.
Of weed. This is a lot. Okay. 500 pounds of weed is a lot.
Yes, it is.
Right? Well, he hit a lick on this guy, right, that was called Juan. Right. Juan, he was like the best. I don't know. The best description for him is he was a paisa, meaning like he was like from Mexico. He didn't really speak no English, but he was like a drug lord. Right.
Right.
He happened to have a little brother. Right. He had a little brother. Wasn't that little, though. Right. He was like my age. But his brother was a king. Right. But his brother was like, he had a lot of, even though he was really young, he had a lot of rank, bro. Right?
Okay, whose brother are we talking about? We're talking about the guy that got robbed?
Yeah, Juan. Juan's the guy that got robbed. Juan got 500 pounds, right? For however reason, he knew Johnny, and he was supposed to give Johnny the weed, but Johnny ended up jacking him. Like, just went to the house, took the 500 pounds at the safe house, took the 500 pounds from the safe house. Took it, right? Well, Juan's little brother, right? We're just going to call him Little Juan, right? Little Juan was a king, though, with a lot of rank, bro.
Okay.
Like a lot of rank, right? Even though he was young.
Okay. Now before we go past this, right? So there's a lot of moving parts here, right? And but I want to clarify something and just kind of bring it up so the audience understands. Usually, at least where I'm from, you're not allowed to rob or hurt or anything of a Latin King's family. And so, so during this process, before Johnny robs this guy, you know, was he made aware of that? Did he not care about the consequences, or how was that playing out for him? Like, what was his status in the nation that allowed him to take those steps?
So, and there is a lot of rules in the Latin King. And this is like literally in black and white, meaning there's like an actual manifesto where they state all the rules so it can be clear to everybody. And everybody is supposed to learn them, right? Well, in my experience, the rules are bent all the time, broken every day, all the time, bro, and used to their benefit.
Right. Right.
In reality, right, he knew that the weed was going to belong to Juan, because in reality, it wasn't really Juan's weed. It was another guy's weed. But Juan was going to get the weed, right? And it was going to be Juan that was going to get the weed. So Juan was going to distribute the weed and Juan was going to make the profit off it, right? So Johnny was just like, I'm going to go to the safe house and I'm going to take the weed before it gets to Juan. That way Juan's not getting jacked and little Johnny, which is a king, can't get mad. That was his, his justification, basically. You get what I'm saying?
And okay. So his idea was, even though it's probably going to a fellow member, the member doesn't have it right now. So I'm basically cutting it off before he has his hands on it type of deal. So he's not really robbing a king. He's robbing it before it gets to a king.
True, true. That was his idea. And plus, he felt like once I get the 500 pounds, I could look out for the hood, right? I could look out for the kings, give them like 50, 60 pounds, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. I don't know. And because you're supposed to kick back. If you hit a lick, there was a hood rule that if you hit a lick, you got to kick the hood like 10% of that, right?
Okay.
Of any lick you hit. Because basically, if you hit a lick and whoever's after you for hitting that lick, the hood is going to protect you. So the hood has to benefit from you hitting licks.
Right. That makes sense.
So that was like a hood rule and people usually followed it. I'd never seen an instance where they didn't, except in his case, which we'll get to, right? So he hits this lick for 500 pounds, right? Mind you, this guy is like my best friend, right-hand man. I'm his right-hand man, really, right? And so he hits the lick. I didn't even know he hit the lick until Little Juan showed up, pulled up on me, and was like, yo, where's Johnny at? I'm like, why? He's like, this dude just jacked me for 500 pounds, right? And I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, what? And so when I acted like I hadn't talked to him. Well, I did talk to him that morning, but he didn't say nothing. So when I got a chance, I ended up calling him and asking him. And he's like, yeah, I hit a lick for 500 pounds. But little Juan is lying. It's not his brother's weed. It's his other guy's weed, right? So long story short, they call an emergency meeting, right? Everybody got to show up. So everybody does show up, right? Well, let me backtrack. They call an emergency meeting, but only like 10 guys showed up. But when I meant that, like everybody showed up, like big important people showed up, people that had rank. Like if you have no rank or you were involved in this shit, you didn't even show up. You didn't even probably even know about it. So right. Anyways, and it was quick, like an hour later, like everybody that's anybody from my hood was there. You know what I'm saying? So like the Inca, Casinca, Enforcer, and other guys that had like really big rank were there immediately. Right. Well, Little Juan, he had a car wash, and the meeting was at the car wash. Right. Immediately, I didn't see what had I didn't see what transpired behind the scenes. Right. I'm in the dark of knowing of like what really happened at the moment. But when I got to the meeting, immediately I seen what was going on. Like, I didn't really know to believe Little Juan or Johnny, like, because Little Juan's claiming like, yo, he jacked my brother Juan for the 500 pounds, bro. Right. And Johnny, he's my best friend. He's telling me like, nah, bro. Juan and Little Juan are lying, right? But I'm not blasting my boy, Johnny, right? Because Little Juan, I grew up with him too. He's my homie too, right? But so I'm kind of stuck in the middle and I'm like, let's see how this plays out. And then like, it's kind of like a heated situation, right? Like Little Juan and Juan, it'll like pressing me like, bro, where the fuck is Johnny? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, this motherfucker jacked me for 500 pounds. Like, I know.
So he didn't show up to the meeting.
No, obviously not. Like, I'm calling my boy Johnny in front of them, like, and he's not answering.
Okay.
But I had shot him a text, like, yo, I'm going to call you, don't answer. And I'm calling people in front of them, like, yo, have you seen Johnny? Have you seen Johnny? And no, everybody's like, no, I haven't seen him. Right? So I'm kind of covering for him, not knowing what's going on. But when I show up at the meeting, immediately, like, you could tell they had conversations. Like, as soon as the meeting started up, like, our number one at the time was a guy named Paulie. And our number two at the time was a guy named G. In reality, though, G was the number one. And Paulie was the number two. Paulie and G were cousins, first cousins, right?
Okay.
And I say in reality, G was the number one, even though he didn't hold it, was because he had the number one spot for a while. But he got into it with like a regional officer. So he was kind of like shuffling positions around just to like, to be able to run the hood. He was basically running the hood through a puppet. His puppet was Paulie.
Okay. Right? Okay. And so for people that don't really understand the dynamic of, you know, just like even going back just to like having an emergency meeting, right? There's an emergency meeting. You get that text, you get that call, whatever it is. First of all, I understand even if you're not the one at fault in these meetings, your heart drops, bro. Like your heart sinks. You're like, damn, I got to show up. Why do I got to show up to emergency meeting? You don't know what's happening. You know what I'm saying? You don't know.
Well, something bad's happened if they call an emergency meeting though.
Right, exactly. And you don't know what it's about. You know what I mean? So just for people to understand, like you walk into these things, you're kind of walking in blind sometimes, man.
You are. And
you know, these basements or attics or rooms, wherever they are, you know, there's not a lot of escape points. You know, you usually walk into these places, you're strip searched, and you're put in a situation where you're around a bunch of the guys. And if you're the one answering questions, it's not always, you're not always being treated the best. And so these are really high tense situations, man. But go ahead.
And this one, it was so quick that there was like no search or nothing. It was almost like I didn't know what was going on behind the scenes, but the moment the meeting started, I knew it. Like the meeting started out with the number one saying, "All right, check it out. Listen, Johnny, from this moment on, is on SOS. If you see him, don't kill him or shoot him, but snatch him up. If you can't, shoot him in the leg. He jacked a brother," and he pointed at Little Juan. "He jacked him for 500 pounds. And I'm like, "That's not true." I just like I drove to the car wash with Little Juan. He was like, "He jacked my brother. He jacked my older brother Juan." Right.
Right. So I'm like, "So can you say anything, or you just got to kind of stand
there?" I'm just kind of standing there, and then like Little Juan kind of walked away during the meeting and got on the phone. So Paulie and G are kind of holding the meeting. Like they're asking, like, you know, the rundown questions. Where does he live? Where has he been staying? Where this, where that, where this, you know, like they're really like actively searching. So I'm like, damn, why are they so like incentivized or like so thirsty to get him? Like immediately became apparent that that everyone in that meeting knew that Johnny hadn't jacked the brother for real. Right. Because you could tell the vibe was like, damn, whoever gets their hands on Johnny and recovers the weed gets to keep it or split it with the people that are recovering it, aka Little Juan and his brother.
Right.
Because basically what was really going on is a guy got jacked for 500 pounds. Juan was supposed to get the weed. He ain't get it. So now, well, Juan and his little brother, Little Juan, they want to recover the weed, not to give it back to the guy that it belongs to. They want to get it. They want to go after it to keep the 500 pounds because,
right,
you know, we're talking about, I mean, to do the math real quick, you know, I'm going to look it up. Off the top of my head, what? So like, let's say you sell each pound for about $800, right? Times. So we're talking about like 80, 100, 100 grand, right?
Right.
So in their mind, they're like, this is a free 80, 100 grand. But it was shocking because I'm like, damn, that quick, they just X this keen out. Over 80, 100 grand. Like, that's how fast that happened. Like, so it became obvious, like, there was some type of little get-together between Little Juan, G, and Paulie.
That's actually $400,000, bro.
Oh, it's 400?
Yeah. If you do 800 a pound times 500, it's $400,000. You know, and that's assuming that nobody's breaking down any of the pounds and selling it. You know, they're just going wholesale. So imagine if you...
Most likely it'll go wholesale though.
Right, right.
My bad on that.
No, that's still a lot.
That's still a lot. That's even more money. They're even more incentivized.
Right.
You can see why immediately they said, you know what, fuck this dude. These guys are in position of power, right? Paulie and G are number one and number two. Little Juan, he's a really known king. He has a lot of money. He's known for being like a breadwinner. He owns a few businesses. He's like the brick man.
Right. Okay. So let me give some context to this a little bit. Right. Let me ask you this. This split decision. Right. This split second decision where they just decide this guy is going to have a SOS. Right. Which, you know, for my listeners, they should know by now. Could be a shoot on site, smash on site, KOS, obviously kill on site. So for these guys to make that decision, right? Let me go on the other side. You know, what kind of king prior to this moment, you know, was Johnny? I mean, was he a good king? Was he putting in work? Was he paying his dues? Was he always around? Did everybody like him? You know, what kind of guy was he?
Looking back now, I can say he was a scumbag, bro.
Okay.
But generally speaking, he was a good king. Like he did what he was told. He put in work. He, you know, he paid his dues.
Right. He was making a sacrifice. He was getting shot at, I'm sure, you know, for the guys.
Shot at. He put in work. There was one situation though where like he got hit another lick before. And this was a really big lick. He hit a lick for like 300 pounds and like three keys, right? And this was like 2 years prior to that. This is a huge lick, right? And he hit a dude that was not involved with the Kings at all, bro. Like, right. This dude was like involved with like the Jalisco cartel, maybe the Sinaloa cartel or something, right?
Right.
Anyways, he hit him for the lick. Him and another guy hit the lick. The Kings, a king that the guy that they hit went up to a big known king and told him about it. And he knew that who had hit the lick. And Johnny did, it wasn't a secret. Like, he hit the lick. You know, he went by cars. You know, he was balling out, right? He kicked back to the box. I think he gave like a quarter key. He grabbed a quarter key, turned it into a whole, they re-rocked it into a half a key and gave it to the hood just for the hood to sell. He gave the hood like 10 or 20 pounds, right? Just for the box. Like, this is all box money. This is not right. Including like he was just looking out for dudes. You know what I'm right. saying? Like, you right. get a pound, you get a pound. Like, he was showing love, bro. Like,
right, right.
Right? So it was no secret. He was actually doing like protocol. Like, I hit a lick. Let me look out for the box. Let me look out for all the brothers. So if anybody comes for me, they come in for the whole hood too. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. So and the reason why I asked that, bro, about him and kind of his character leading up to that decision is because, you know, this is the problem, man, is that, you know, these chapters essentially end up being ran by dictators, you know, exactly. And so you got somebody who, yeah, as a character, you know, maybe you can look back in hindsight and say he had bad character flaws. But as far as the nation goes, he was doing everything he should have been doing as a guy for the nation. And so for them to be able to just in 1 second decide like this guy needs to be X'd, you know what I'm saying? And it's somebody who's dedicated a life to the nation. That's one of the ongoing themes I always emphasize, man, is like, you know, not what you know, but who you know. You know what I mean? Like,
it was unjustified, bro. He had gave 10 years prior up until that moment, he had gave 10 years of his life to the nation.
Right. Right. So that was my point of bringing that up. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
immediately you could tell in the meeting that they had like got all three of them got together and were like, let's get this 500 pounds. All we got to do is put this dude on souls, snatch him up, get the 500 pounds and kill him or something. And
right.
The meeting was just to like make it official. You know what I'm saying? Like, they had to go through the procedure. It's like a judge right. and a prosecutor getting together and basically sealing your faith, but they still got to go into court and make a show of it.
Right. You feel of course. What I'm saying? Yeah.
And basically that's all the meeting was for, just to make it official and paint a picture to everybody else that didn't know that this is the story right here. Like, this guy jacked the brother, which wasn't true though. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Right.
But on the other lick he hit, he had done everything he was supposed to do. Right. But this other king, he was like a big top level king. And when I say that, it's like he had major, major rank. Like, at one point he was the regent for our region. And at another point, he was even considered to be like the enforcer for the whole nation. Right.
Okay.
And he was like, he was tight with like the Corona, right? Which runs all the kings, right?
Right.
Like, he was personally tight with him, right? So this dude had a lot of rank, right? We're just going to call him Suge Knight, right?
Right,
so,
right.
I know I'm backtracking on Johnny's story, but just bear with me. So Suge Knight heard about the lick. He wanted the work. He wanted the lick for himself. Basically, Suge Knight, he kind of hit licks himself. Like, he was a big lick guy. And the reason he was a big lick guy was he had two cops that worked with him, right? And basically, he'd either, like, tell you, like, I'll sell you 10 keys and sell you the 10 keys and then have the cops pull you over and take the 10 keys back, right?
Okay.
Or he hear about you hitting a lick and he'd send the cops in to raid your shit and they take whatever lick you hit. Or if you were a big drug dealer, he might send them in and take your shit.
Mm.
And that's how he operated. Long story short, this dude, Suge Knight, he jacked my boy Johnny, right? For everything he had, right?
For so, the 500 pounds?
No, no, no. For the first lick that he had 2 years prior to the 500 pounds.
Oh, okay, okay.
300 pounds and the three keys, right?
Okay.
Whatever he had left, he had like two keys left, maybe like 100 pounds, 150 pounds, something like that. He licked them for whatever he had left, right? And this was like right after the lick, like 2 weeks after hitting the lick or something.
And he's still a king at this time.
The thing is two cops went, no, three or four, two cops were legit for sure. The other two or three people that went into the house and raided the house, who knows if they were cops or not, right? But they went in, raided the house, and acted like they were there on a search warrant and took all the drugs, took all the guns, and then just left and left them zip tied up, right? You know, when they leave, they realize like, oh, we just got jacked. You know what I mean? But these are real cops coming in, but they just jacking them. It was like training day type of shit. And
right.
Later on, he realized like, damn, I got jacked by that king, Suge Knight. So that left like a really bad taste in his mouth. And he openly talked about this to everybody that would listen. Right? So leading up to the other lick he hit for 500 pounds, people didn't really, really like him because he was outspoken in terms of like talking a lot of shit about top management kings, right?
Right.
So it wasn't hard for them to just be like, man, fuck this dude. Let's take the 500 pounds from him and it's our lick. It's already happened to him before. You get what I'm saying?
Right.
Like
right.
This exact scenario had literally just happened to him 2 years prior where he hit a lick and a bigger fish came in and took his meal. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Okay. Okay, so just to kind of catch everybody up, you know, this is just one instance, bro. I mean, obviously it's an accumulation, but it's an instance that you're noticing and you're already having second thoughts about being a king, you know, continuing to be a king, and then all this starts to transpire. And I'm sure thoughts in the back of your head are, well, if they can do this to this guy, they could definitely do it to me.
Absolutely. That was my thought. And also, I was so close to him, bro. I admired him, looked up to him at the time so much. To see them just to be like, and to realize that some, like, a conversation had took place before the official meeting, and because it was just like, it was already agreed upon what was going to happen. You could tell. Like, they just walked in and said, all right, so listen, this was going, literally this was their words. Hey, all right, so listen, this is what's going on, guys. Johnny, right. From this moment on, he's on us. He's no longer a king.
Mm.
If you see him, don't shoot him or kill him. We need him. Unless you shoot him in the leg, put him in the car, in the trunk, whatever. Right?
Right.
We need him. We physically need that body alive. Like, that was literally the words. And little Juan walked away, came back in, and was said, yo, I just talked to the region, to the regional Inca for our whole region. They already put the word out. Everybody's looking for him.
Right.
Like, right,
let me ask you this. Did you feel like there was an extra emphasis of that conversation being directed towards you because everybody knew that he was your best friend?
In the meeting, no, but I felt like they included me in that meeting because at the time I'm like 17, bro. I'm like really, I'm really nobody. I'm just like a street king. Right.
Right.
So they had me there. I was almost like in that situation, I kind of felt like I was a little bit of a hostage, like for little Juan, like, and his brother Juan, like they were
right.
Like, we could get to Johnny through this guy right here.
You right.
Know what I'm saying? So like this dude made me tag along with him everywhere. Like he wouldn't let me leave his presence. You know what I mean? Okay. And like, if I'm on the phone, he's looking over, he's like, who you talking to? Like that, bro.
Right.
So,
okay.
Long story short, like the whole day passes. I think I spend the night at his house, the next day, whatever the case. I found an excuse to leave. And finally, I'm able to call this dude and be like, yo, where you at? And my boy Johnny, and he's like, what's good? Like, he had started like texting, like, yo, what's going on? And I was like, don't text me, bro. I'm texting him like, don't text me, don't call me, nothing. Like, just hide. You know what I mean? Right after the meeting, I had texted him because I know they're looking for him. Right.
Right.
Let me mind you, too, like, if you think about it, I'm a bad king at this time, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I was about to say that. No, it's
that.
But it makes sense though. It makes sense though, bro. Like you
to my friends, bro.
Yeah, yeah. And I went through this many times, bro. On my own story, I talked about, like, I always talk about the guy Mondi, you know what I'm saying? Like, and to an even stronger extent, you know, he had cooperated and I chose to stand up for him. You know what I mean? Which makes me obviously on the outs. And so you're in a similar situation where this is your friend. Before you were, you know what I'm saying? And now yeah. You're in a situation, it's like, you can't just turn those feelings on and off like a light switch, bro. It doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
It doesn't, bro. And you feel like a sense of loyalty to someone. You feel a bond, bro. And like, at the time, I couldn't imagine betraying my boy like that. Like, and knowing, like, if I betrayed him at that moment, set him up, they were going to snatch him up and kill him, bro.
Right.
You get what right. I'm saying? Like, there was no way around it. Like, and I'd be the person, like, I don't know if I could live with myself at that time to betray my best friend, one of my best friends, to get smoked, bro. You know right. what I mean?
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, right, as this process is going along, you know, the heat starts to intensify on him and on you, right? Well, I mean, they start.
He ends up. Through another guy we knew, he ends up selling all the weed in like 3-4 days, bro. The whole 500 pounds. So he got all the cash. The guy that sold the weed for him was a king, right? From a whole different chapter, from a whole different area. He had no idea, though.
Okay.
By the time he found out that the weed was a lick from who was, and he found out who that the whole nation's after, like the whole region is looking for him, he ends up keeping like 60, 70 pounds or something. Because he had like 60, 70 pounds that he had to sell left over, right? And mind you, this guy, this is what he did, bro. He used to get like 1,000 pounds and sell them, right? In like a week or two. Like this. So my boy Johnny, when he went up to him, like he knew, like, oh, this nigga, this is a dude that he moves serious weight in terms of weed. So
right.
So it was like for, and we were both cool with him. So it was like obvious for him, like, yo, bro, sell this weed for me. And he sold it for him quick. And he had like, I don't know, maybe it could have been 70. It could have been 50 pounds. I don't know. It was something like that. He had left over. And by the time he found out that who was after the weed, he basically jacked him for the 50, 60 pounds. Right. He kind of was like, he kind of just ghosted dude, like, you know, like pretended like he had nothing to do with nothing. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
Because he didn't want no one knowing that he had sold the weed either. You know what I mean? Because he felt like he'd be in trouble.
Right.
Right. Because he's a king. So everybody's kind of looking for him, bro. A week goes by, 2 weeks goes by. I had met up with him. I seen him. He looked out for me a little bit, right? I kind of like, I like at that time, like I felt like, you know, that morning they were looking for him. I think the emergency meeting took place at 1 o'clock. He hit the lick at like 7 a.m, bro. Right. So I seen him like 3 days later, and like I think he gave me like $3,000, and that's it, I think. I'm pretty sure that was it. And he owed me like $1,500 or something, right?
Right.
So I'm like, I had borrowed him some money like before he hit that lick. He was kind of like he right before he hit the lick, he was kind of broke. He was kind of fucked up. So this was like a major thing in his life, and it's a major lick. So I had borrowed him some money. He owed some other people some money. So he gave me like $3,000 or close to $3,000. And to be honest, I kind of felt like when he did that, I didn't cover for him for money, bro. But I felt because of that, I felt like he owed me. And maybe that sounds fucked up, but I'm like, damn, like I looked out for you, dog. And you have all this. You just hit a lick for 500 pounds. I went out my way. Because you're my boy, to make sure you didn't get snatched up by the kings, and basically,
right. And to be fair, right, to throw a little bit of context to that is, you know, it's not like you just sent a text to somebody and said, you know, hey, I don't know where he is, or you know, we're talking about literally covering up for a guy who the nation wants to kill. Meaning yeah, that
want,
if you
want him bad, bro, like
right. Meaning that if you you're liable.
I'm looking for him, yeah, like I'm literally taking them to places where I know he's not going to be at where he used to live. You know, I'm not right. taking them where like I'm chilling with this guy almost every day, dog. Like, I could have easily, we could have went to his girl's house. We could have went to, I don't know where, you know, off the top of my head, but I could have took him places where I knew he was at, where I could have set him up, right? But I didn't, right, bro, because I was coming for him because he was my boy. So to right, be honest, like, I kind of felt like, damn, like I didn't really, I felt hurt, but I didn't take it personal at that moment, right? When he only gave me like 3 G's. So I'm like, at the time, I guess I was young. I was like, all right, whatever, dog. Like, I ain't do this because of this. Like, I did this because you're my boy. And I said something like that to him. And right, that night, this was like 3 days later after I hit the lake, he's like, yo, I'm a dip to Florida, dog. I'll holler at you, bro. I'm like, all right, man. You like he told me he was literally driving the next morning, right? He's living in a hotel, right? He got all the money. They sold most of the weed. Dude that he had that had sold the weed for him had already ghosted him by like the fourth or fifth day when I seen him. So he was like, yo, I'm gonna just dip with the money I got, which obviously he got a bunch of money, right? So he's like, I'm dipping, I'm gone, bro. When I seen him, he had a brand new truck, right? So he's already spending the money.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and they obviously went shopping. Like, when I walked into his hotel, they got a bunch of, like, shopping bags, shit like that, you know? So
he's like, Did they ever come close to catching him?
Yes. Well, that's what I'm getting to. Like, so I see him in the hotel. He gives me the 3 G's. I'm like, all right, bro, I'll give him a hug. He's like, this is the last. He's like, maybe in a year you go down there, dog, visit me, whatever the case. Thank you, bro, looking out for me. Like this was like a farewell, bro. I hope I see you soon. You know right, what I'm saying? And so I left, whatever. Like, a week passes. Like, the second week comes in. Like, the shit kind of start dying down a little bit. Like niggas is starting to realize, like, this motherfucker gone. He probably sold all the weed. I'm in meetings and conversations because they kept having meetings like every couple of days about this. Like, they were really thirsty to get it. They were like, they're literally having conversations like, there's no way this dude sold all the weed already. That's 500 pounds. Not knowing the weed got sold in 3 days, right?
Right.
And I'm thinking he in Florida. And I'm thinking during these conversations, like, the weed's already sold and this nigga gone. Like, y'all chasing y'all tails. Well, anyways, like, on the second week, the dude, Paulie, that's our number one. And when I say number one, he's the Inca.
Right.
Or our hood. Paulie calls me and he's like, hey, listen, go grab, at the time, I have like maybe like 7-8 guns at my house that are hood guns. He calls me. He's like, listen, right now, shoot to Walgreens. Take like 3 guns with you. I'll meet you up there with a few guys, right? They're driving. They're like rushing to Walgreens. I live closest to the Walgreens. They're going to. That's why they called me, right? They have no guns on them, but since I live like literally like a few like 2 blocks, 3 blocks from the Walgreens, they called me to meet them up there with the guns. They're like, we got Johnny. He's inside Walgreens right now, bro. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. They're like, meet us right now there. Right now. Hurry the fuck up. So I hang up. I call Johnny. Like, bro, you're at Walgreens, dog? What the fuck is you doing? Like, bro, I thought you were in Florida. He's like, how the fuck do you know I'm in Walgreens? Well, when Paulie had called me, because I was like, are you sure? He's like, bro, he's with my cousin at Walgreens right now. My cousin drove him to Walgreens or met him up at Walgreens. They in Walgreens together right now, bro. He just texted me. That's how they were setting him up through Paulie's cousin, because Johnny was really tight with Paulie's cousin, right? But Johnny didn't even know that Paulie's cousin was Paulie's cousin, bro.
Right? Oh, wow.
And mind you, I'm thinking he's in Florida. So when they call me and tell me that, I right away call Johnny like, bro, you at Walgreens right here on this street? Like 2 blocks away from my crib? He's like, how the fuck do you know that? So I tell him like, bro, this nigga Paulie just called me, bro. And he said that you're with his cousin, bro, at Walgreens. And dude's setting you up right now, bro. Right? I'm like, he's like, what the fuck? I'm like, is he next to you? He's like, nah, he's in the car waiting for me, bro. I'm like, bro, get the fuck out of there right now, dog. I'm supposed to go up there with 3 guns right now. They speeding to that Walgreens right now.
Right.
I'm like, whatever you do, don't tell Paulie's cousin, though. He's like, nah, I'm not, nah. And he hangs up and dips. So when I get up there, he's gone, right? And Paulie's cousin is gone, too, though. Right? He left, too. So Paulie's just looking at me like, damn, where does dude go? Right? And so we end up, he just kind of just looked at me a little weird. I didn't think much of it, you know, but inside I'm kind of feeling like paranoid, guilty, whatever the case. Anyway, right. So I don't think much of it, right? I leave, whatever. I call Johnny, like, bro, I thought you had been left, whatever the case. And he's like, man, I was supposed to leave. But I forgot what reason he said he hadn't left, but he was leaving for sure. And he's like, man, thank you so much, dog. Like I'm forever in debt with you. Like, you saved my life again, basically. You know what I mean? Which I did. Right?
Right.
And I'm like, bro, you ain't tell Paulie's cousin nothing, right? He's like, nah, hell no, I wouldn't do you like that. I'm like, all right, for sure. Anyways, this is like on a Thursday or something, bro. Right? The following week, there's a meeting. I go to the meeting, right? But there was like a message sent out, like everybody had to go, mandatory. Everybody had to show up, no matter what, no excuses. Like,
right.
Like, so this was like a big meeting. Like, and this is kind of unusual where we have a meeting every week or every 2 weeks, but really there's never like an emphasis, like you have to be there no matter what.
Right. And let's explain that. Let's explain that though, because I think the common perception is that everybody has to show up to every meeting all the time. And I mean, that's at least how it was for the majority of our meetings. But once again, we run the comparisons here, you know, best case scenario, you know, 15, 20 guys in my hood is not going to compare to 35, 40 guys in your hood getting together. You know what I'm saying? So it's a little bit different. It's a little bit bigger of a playing field. So, I mean, if I'm guessing right, you know, when you say it's not always mandatory, not everybody has to show up, you know, there's different reasons why people are allowed not to come. You know, yes. Those included being their status, if they're on pay status, which is something we can get into in a little bit, or whatever the case is, they have a good reason, whether it be work or something like that. There's exceptions to the rule, correct?
There's always exception rules, like you have a job or you're on pay status, because the Lion Kings, they really work in two levels. There's like foot soldiers, and then after you're a foot soldier for a while, some guys stay foot soldiers forever, but and you know guys get positioned, but there's like a third level where like either you're kind of like a working man and you just pay your dues and provide what you can to the hood when you can or when you're called upon. And then there's other dudes that are like just straight drug dealers, like breadwinners, and they pay a little more than everybody else and they give more to the hood, but they do a lot less. But right. they're the financial resource of every hood, of the region, of the nation. You know,
right.
And beyond okay. the hood and the nation selling their own work and their own drugs, they give a lot. They'll give
okay.
They'll give guns, they'll give drugs, they'll give money throughout the year just to remain on pay status. But that's like a huge source of income for the Lion King. Is like
right. Okay, so we'll revisit the pay status thing. So bam, everybody's got to go to this meeting. You're on deck. Are you thinking anything? Are you thinking, damn,
like,
what's...
I didn't think it had nothing to do with me. Maybe I was just being naive or stupid. But there was no hint that it had nothing to do with me. So I'm like, all right, everybody got to go. There's no excuse. Like, so when I show up, there's like close to like 40. And this was an official meeting, meaning like the meeting that I talked about earlier was just like, it happened like so quick. Like there was no body searches, nothing. You know what I mean?
Right. On the fly.
It was on the fly. Like, yeah, literally on the fly. This one's an official meeting. Like there, like, you know where it's going to be at. Everybody's called. You get in there. They search you. You got to take all your belts off. Any keys, phones, they all go in a separate bag, get put outside somewhere or in a different room. And people officially open it, meaning like they open it with a prayer or something, right? With a Lion King prayer,
right? Right.
This was one of the meetings, right? So when I show up, some people show up early. I happen to be there early, right? I'm like 10 minutes early. So there's maybe like 20 guys there already. We're waiting for another 15, 20 guys. At the time, I was really tight. I didn't know these guys. These guys are a lot older than me. I had met them like a year prior, which was Paulie and G, which ran the hood, right?
Right.
I had met them like a year prior. So I wasn't really in good rapport with them like that. But I was really liked by them at the time. I was pretty cool with them, right, at the time. Particularly the dude Paulie, which was, he was our number one at that moment, right? Because like I said, him and G, their first cousins, they were trading the position back and forth, right?
Right.
So I get there. I say, what's up to everybody? I'm talking to Paulie because he's my boy. Right? I'm kind of tight with him. But he's one of the main drivers behind going after Johnny, right?
Right, right.
Like, he's super thirsty. Like, in his mind, like, he damn near got jacked the way he was acting, bro. He acted like he was missing 500 pounds. And he probably felt like that because he was like, damn, if I get my hands on Johnny, that's, you know, he was going to get maybe like 100, 200 pounds out of it. So right. He's thinking like, damn, I'm missing out on money right here, right? So anyways, long story short, I get there. I'm talking to him. I'm like, yo, what's going on? He's like, this is a big meeting, bro. And he, mind you, he number one. He's like, this is a big meeting, bro. I'm like, what's going to happen? And he's like, listen, I'm pressing charges on two guys today. I'm like, get the fuck out. I'm like this, like in conversation like this, like kind of laughing.
Right, right.
Like, get the fuck out of who? He's like, you're going to see right now. But he's saying it like it's not me, though. Right, like,
right, right.
Like,
right.
There's nothing to worry about. He's like, motherfucker's going to get fucked up today. And I kind of even like clap my hands and like rub them together like, ooh, someone's going to get fucked up.
He's right, like, nah, it's juicy.
They more than going to get fucked up. Someone ain't making it out of this bitch. I'm like, nah, you for realies. I'm dead serious. I'm like, oh, all right. So, you know, everybody else show up. We go upstairs. The meeting takes place in a building, bro, in a third-story apartment, right? A small third-story apartment. It's like a two-bedroom, bro. So it's not big. There's almost 40 guys. If not, it could have been under 40. It could have been like 38, 37 guys. So imagine like almost 40 guys in a two-bedroom, third-story apartment. It's a tight space, bro, right? Like everybody's shoulder to shoulder, dog, right? And like I said, like they, you know, we went through the routine of everybody searching, you putting your phones in a bag, all that shit, right? I had showed up to the meeting, right, with this other dude that I'm gonna just call Joker, right? He was a really good king, bro. I had met him. This is like towards the end of the year, just like still on the ground. I had met him early in the year, right?
Right.
He was a really good dude, dog. Like, he was like 10 years older than me, 11 years older than me. He was a really good dude. I looked up to him. I really liked him. We kind of like hit it off. But I was really cool with one of his brothers. So there was like that history between me and one of his brothers.
Right. So he was just one of them dudes you could never, nobody ever said a bad word about him. Just one of them dudes through and through.
He was a really good dude, really cool. And a really good king. Like, everybody loved him. No one disliked him. He was a really quiet and passive dude, though, too.
Right.
He was about his money, though. He older dude. He had did a bunch of time in the joint before. So a lot of people respected him. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right. A lot of respect.
So I had drove up there. We had drove up in his car there. Right. So we went there together. So since I had met him earlier in the year, he had became really tight with me, Johnny, and a few other guys. And basically, like, we were kind of like a crew, dog. Like we went out to eat. We went out every weekend together. Like, we showed up to meetings together. We showed up to the hood together. Like, me, Joker, and Johnny, and a few other guys were always together that whole year, dog, prior to Johnny hitting that
hit. Right. Right.
But mind you, Joker, we just met him that year, dog, right? So anyways, because he had just got out of prison not too long before that. So from doing some, like, he did a lot of time. He did like 10 plus, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, he had just been fresh out, whatever it is. Anyhow, so we go to the meeting, we're there, right? G, he opens the meeting, like, you know, we're going to press charges today. And he passes it over to Paulie. Like, who you pressing charges against, Paulie? And Paulie's like, all right, I'm pressing charges against two people. The first one, listen, right before the meeting opened, Paulie got right next to me and stood right next to me. And we're kind of like whispering to each other, like kind of like just like banter, like bullshit, right? And we're kind of just like laughing, joking around. So when the meeting started, we're shoulder to shoulder, bro. Like literally we're touching each other. Like our shoulders are touching each other, dude. Right.
Right.
So when they pass him the floor, like, all right, G passes him the floor, like, all right, who you pressing charges against, Paulie? He's like, all right, I got two pressing charges against two motherfuckers. the first motherfucker is right here. So he a little taller than me. So when he point, he like basically damn near like pointing on top of my head, dog. And I'm damn. Like, what the fuck? Like, right. Like, bro, I probably look like I got punched in the face, dog. Like the air literally got sucked out of me, bro. Cause I was like completely cut off guard. I was completely in shock. Like, what the fuck? Is this nigga for real? Right?
Right.
Like I was so caught off guard. I was shocked. I was speechless, bro. Right? And he goes on, like he says, like, I'm pressing charges because you lied. I literally called you and told you to meet me at Walmart. He explains the whole situation where he had called me and told me to bring three guns to Walgreens that we were going to catch Johnny. And he's like, I know for a fact you called Johnny and told him that because Johnny told my cousin. I guess like when that situation happened that I explained a minute ago.
Yeah.
Johnny had actually turned around, went outside and started talking shit to Paulie's cousin. Like, you bitch ass nigga, you tried to set me up. And Paulie's cousin, Johnny happened to have a gun on him. So that's why when we showed up, Paulie's cousin wasn't there because he had fled because Johnny had pulled out a gun on him. Right.
Mm.
So, and I remember
thinking. So he lied. So he ended up exposing you anyway.
He ended up exposing me, dog. He exposed me, bro. So Paulie's like, and Paulie's here. He's like, you fucking lied. We were going to snatch that motherfucker up. And your fucking dumbass called this motherfucker and told him. He turned around and told my cousin, right. And I'm like speechless. I'm in shock, bro. Right. I'm like, what the fuck? Like I feel like I got hit by a train, bro. Like,
right.
Like, I'm caught red-handed, basically, bro. But I'm like, nah, hell no, that's a lie. Your cousin's lying. His cousin's not a king, bro. So I'm like, he ain't a king. Bring him here right now, right? And I start saying that because I'm like, you can't believe his word over mine. Because I start saying stuff like that. Like, how are you going to believe is what he says? My cousin wouldn't lie. Well, G and, like, three other kings that had a lot of rank start, like talking shit, too. Like, listen. Like, you could tell, like they all knew, that group right there knew what was going on. Like, knew what was going to happen before the meeting. Because they're like, listen, tell the truth right now. Just admit it. Stop fucking lying, dude. Like, tell us the truth, and it's not going to go that bad, bro. Just tell us the truth. And I'm like, bro, I'm not lying. Like, I probably looked and sounded so desperate, bro, because I'm, like, begging. Like, bro, I'm not lying. I'm telling you, like. I didn't even know what to say, bro. I just
right. Well, I mean, essentially, your life's on the line, bro, because you don't know. Yeah, you don't know how fast or how far that shit can escalate. Like, yeah, even if it is a violation, you know what I'm saying? It could turn into a murder easily.
True. And I remember looking around, bro, at that moment, right, when I'm like arguing, they're telling me this, and I'm looking at the windows, bro. I'm looking at the doors. There's too many dudes by the door. Like, right. It must have been like a fight or flight situation where my body was like, just run, bro. Like, everything, like, bro, I remember when I'm arguing, dog, I there was tears in my eyes, bro, because I felt like crying, dog, because I was like, I felt so trapped. I felt like an animal. I was like, dog, I'm literally not going to make it out of here, bro.
Yeah, I bet, dog. You're 17 at the time, right?
Yeah, there's a window. I'm 17. There's like a window by me. And I even debated, like, could I just like, I'm not going to be able to run to the window, open it. They're going to, like, physically stop me. I was like, maybe I could dive out of there, dog. I'm on the third story, and I'm, like, debating, like, should I just try to, like, dive out the fucking window and shit, right?
Right.
Because I'm, like, scared for my life, right?
Right.
But we're, like, going back and forth, and finally, like, they kill the conversation. Like, G kills the conversation. He's like, listen, man, we're done hearing that shit. You ain't going to admit to it. That's fine. After this meeting you're going over, we're going to deal with this shit. That's it. That's the end of that shit. That's the end of the conversation, dog. And he basically killed the conversation. So it was basically left like after the meeting, because he said, you know what? We're done talking about you. I'm done arguing with this fucking stupid ass shit. After the meeting, you stay in here. You're going over. We're going to deal with you right afterwards. All right. Move on to the next guy. Who else are you pressing charge against? Like, that's exactly what he said. So he points at Joker. Like, the next dude I'm going to press charge against is Joker. Joker was like across the room, bro. Right? Like, he's just kind of like watching, kind of shocked. Mind you, everybody's shocked that wasn't in the know, right? Except for like the four or five guys. Like, everybody's looking at me like, damn, bro, you should probably admit to that shit. Like, or looking at me like, I don't know what the fuck going on, right? So when he points at Joker, he's like, I'm pressing charges against you for line and covering for Johnny. You've been saying you don't know, because they had asked him because he was chilling with us, right? For
yeah.
the whole year, dog. So they're like, I guess in Paulie and G's mind, since we were all a crew, I guess he felt like he basically got me red-handed. There's no way that he don't got me, right?
Right.
But maybe in his mind, he felt like if I'm guilty, everybody else in that little circle is also guilty. Everybody in that circle is covering for this dude and knows where he's at and benefiting from it.
But he actually wasn't, though.
In reality, he wasn't, bro. He had no contact with Johnny at all, bro. Johnny, like, since Johnny had only met him that year, he didn't feel close enough to keep contact with him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, I grew up with him. That's why he kept contact with me, because I was covering for him. And I'm fucking calling him, telling him everything that's going on step by step. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So, basically, Paul and G jumped the gun, bro. And they had me, you know, dead to rights, basically. Right.
Right.
For whatever reason, they started to maybe they got confident, they got cocky, like, yeah, we got this bitch ass dumb motherfucker. You know what? His dumb ass must be guilty too. Let's go after him too. Maybe it was a situation like that. Like when they had the conversation between themselves, right? They must have believed that or felt that was like a probability, and that's why they jumped at him and said, "Listen, we're pressing charges against you too." I don't know. I'm gonna guess that's why they did it, right? And they felt ballsy, right? But no one really knows this guy, bro, beyond earlier in the year, dog. Like throughout that year, I got to know him and know his background, right? This guy had been missing for years. He had been in prison, right? So when he pointed him out, he's like, "I'm pressure charges you for covering for dude. You know where dude's at. You've been lying." So Joker right away defends himself like, what the fuck is you talking about right now?
Hold on. Real quick though. So, because this is a question I would have. So I just want to clarify it. When you say nobody really knew him, nobody really didn't know him that well because he was in prison. Is this a situation where he just got out and he latched onto your guys' chapter? Or was he already a part of that chapter but had been gone so long that there was so much turnover that by the time he got out, it wasn't really a lot of the guys around from when he was around?
When he was a king, he was a king from a different chapter. When he got out, his chapter didn't exist anymore.
Okay, so he transferred.
They sent him to our hood.
Okay, that makes sense.
They just sent him to our hood. They just assigned him to our hood.
And okay.
There had been so many turnover, no one knew him, bro.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So that was basically his situation. There might have been one or two guys that knew him. You know what I mean? Or knew of him.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There wasn't a lot of background. Like the only background with him was his brother, and his brother was a really good king. And but dude had done time. You know, he ain't snitch or nothing like that. So like he was an honorable brother. Everybody respected him. He did his time, whatever the case. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
All fuckers looked out for him when he got out. But he's kind of like the people that are there don't know him, bro, at all. Beyond my little clique, my little crew. And we know him as much as we know him from whatever we heard from him and just knowing him from that year, hanging out with him.
You get right, right.
So when the dude pointed, and he starts telling him, like, I'm pressing charges against you. Paulie starts telling Joker, like, I'm pressing charges against you for aiding and abetting Johnny. You're going to get fucked up for that right now. And so Joker right away, mind you, I said he did 10 years in prison. Like, this dude knew all his black and white. He well-spoken dude, you know what I'm saying? Older cat, he ain't scared to defend himself. So right away, he's like, oh, all right. He's like, no, he deny it because it's true. I know this to be a fact, right? He's like, what the fuck are you talking about right now? He's like, what proof do you have? And so they're like, at first, they're like, we don't need no proof. We know this to be a fact. He's like, man, you got me fucked up, bro. I know my black and white, bro. Like, I did 10 plus years. Like,
right. And that means that, and for people that are probably lost a little bit, that's basically just like your,
I know the
you
law.
Know, your oath, your constitution, you know what I mean? Yeah. All the manifesto that is really applicable in this kind of situation. You know your rights, basically.
True. So he's like, nah, you're going to tell me what proof you have. Like, I know my black and white. You got me fucked up. So dude's like, I don't know what made him just like, made Paulie just jump out there and say something really dumb. And he was like, I got proof. I got pictures of you. I got pictures of you with Johnny in your car last week.
Mm.
Mind you, had hit the lick almost 2 weeks before.
Right.
He's like, so Joker, like, you got pictures of me with Johnny in my car 2 weeks ago. He's like, nigga, we got the timestamps on that. He's like, who took these pictures? He's like, a Lion King. So his first thing was like, he's like, so you telling me a Lion King was driving next to me and took pictures of me with dude in my car instead of fucking us up? He's like, he couldn't do it, so he just took pictures of you. Bro, that like set Joker off, bro. He was like,
right. Blatant lie.
But it was a blatant lie. He knew that to be a lie because he knew he wasn't with dude. So he just like went off, bro. Like, you stupid fucking bitch ass motherfucker, you gonna say it. Mind you, you're not allowed to talk to another king like that, right? And call
right. It. Especially an Inca.
Especially that he's your Inca. An Inca, period, and he's your Inca. So he's like, you stupid fucking bitch. The fuck is wrong with you? Gonna sit here and press charges me, you dumb motherfucker. Like, he starts calling dude a bitch, all types of shit. He's like, I'll fuck your bitch ass up right here, motherfucker. I don't give a fuck who's here. So, like, the other kings, like the enforcer, there's like two enforcers at the time. So the two enforcers and G, which he's really like our Inca. He really runs the show. Like, obviously, he jumps in. Like, yo, what the fuck is wrong with you talking to Apollo like that? So he starts calling them a bitch, too. Like, nigga, fuck you, too, you bitch ass nigga. I'll fuck you. What the fuck is wrong with you, right? And, like, he's like hell of aggressive. Like, people are moving out of his way because he starts, like, walking towards these dudes, dog. And they're like, what the fuck?
Right.
For a moment, they got more, like it looked like they were about to try to fuck him up, bro. He's like, I'm about to call Tino right now, and I'm about to get all you dumb motherfuckers fucked up, you stupid motherfuckers. Bro, immediately when he said that, like, their jaws dropped. It's like, immediately, I don't know if they didn't know or hadn't realized it or forgot, but dude had done time with the corona. Right.
And that's what I was gonna say right now. That's, you know, for people who don't know, you know, you hear the name Tino, the old man, you know, that's somebody who had all the active juice, you know what I mean, for you know, somebody that was in the street, you know what I mean? You're talking about the top of the food chain, you know, right there up there in the same conversation as Gino and BK. And so for him to have access to that guy, that says a lot. And I'm sure that made them dudes shit their pants.
It made him shit their pants because Tino at the time was the Corona, dog. And the Corona is basically, he's the number one guy of all the kings, dog. Like, he run the kings. He's the number one. Number one of all of them, like the boss of bosses.
Right.
He had the time with him and he had the time with Gino. Right. So immediately when he said that, they were like, what the fuck? And like one of them was like, you can't do that. I said, man, you got me fucked up, nigga. I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. I'm going to call him right now, right? He started walking to his phone, grabbed the bag of phones, took his phone out, grabbed his car keys, right? And was like, I'm going to call that nigga right now. And they're like, they're kind of like stuttering and like they're even shifting. Like they want to go towards him, but not sure, bro. Like they're kind of discombobulated. Like, what the fuck do we do? Like you could tell they probably like wanted to physically try to stop him. But they were scared to, and they're like, oh my, and they kind of like start backpedaling, like, look, hold on, where the fuck is you going, bro? We're not done talking. You don't got to call Tino, bro. Chill. And he's like, shut the fuck up, bitch. Like that, bro. He's telling the Incas and Casincas, like, shut the fuck up, bitch. Like that, like treating them. And everybody else in the meeting are just like, with their jaws dropped, like, this nigga done lost his mind. You know what I mean?
Right. But shit, he knows that he's in the right. You know what I mean? And I'm sure them other dudes are knowing, damn, we overplayed our hand with this one.
We overplayed our hand. That's exactly what happened. When he gets a hold of his phone, he turns around and like kind of like marches back and almost gets into these dudes' faces and was like, you got 24 hours to produce the pictures of the pictures that your bitch ass claims you got of me with dude. If not, I'm pressing charges against you and you. For pressing false charges against me, which is a real thing. Like you can't make up Trump charges against another king without proof.
For sure.
That's illegal. Right. That's illegal inside the Lion King structure, the Lion King law.
Right. For sure.
So he twists it on them. Like, you got 24 hours to produce these pictures. If not, I'm pressing charges against you in the region, you dumb motherfuckers. Then he does like even more unexpected. He's like, he calls my name. He's like, get your fucking phone, bro. We out this bitch. Come on, let's go. Obviously, dog. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, yeah. I run, grab my phone, and run out of there with him. Like, this dude literally just like because they overplayed their hand. They literally lost the opportunity to do whatever they had planned to do with me. And, you know, right. obviously because of that situation, I took the opportunity and ran out of there with dude. With
Hell him. Yeah.
Like, he literally saved my life, dog.
For yeah. sure.
Long story short, though, he ends up making some phone calls. The dude ends up apologize to him. And they basically, he ends up in an unofficial status where, like, he's still a king from my hood, but, like he can't be touched or talked to. Like, he's not even obligated to do anything. Like, he don't even got to pay dues to the juntas, do nothing. He's just right. a king.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he was told by everybody, like, leave him alone. Don't call him nothing. Leave him alone.
Right.
Y'all niggas going to get fucked up. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. So you ended up benefiting. You ended up being the beneficiary of this whole situation.
Absolutely. In my case, because they're basically, because he called and they said they're trying to make this shit up against me and they're trying to involve some other kings. So basically, he got like X'd out the whole situation and even more because he wasn't like obligated to do anything anymore. And then they put me and another king under investigation. Right. And they couldn't actively go after us or do anything about it because now the nation, the region, the nation are kind of like they're like in the hot seat for going after Joker. So they can't even touch the situation anymore at all.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So basically the only thing they could do to me is just put me under investigation and then, you know, kind of like ban me from the hood for a while.
Right. So otherwise it's like almost like retaliatory kind of puts them in another situation where they're basically going after you because of what happened with him. You know what I mean?
True. But it did save me. Like, it literally saved me because that's all they could do to me, dog, which was like a blessing for me. You know what I mean? Like, I ain't get fucked up. I ain't lose my boy. Like, I lost a lot of respect amongst all the kings there. I ended up being away from the hood for, I was under investigation, but I was also put on hold. Meaning like my crown, my status was on hold. Like, I wasn't like allowed to shake up the crown. I wasn't allowed to like go to meetings or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I was basically not a king almost.
Oh. Did you still have to pay dues?
Yes.
I thought. Okay. Okay.
And this went on for like a year, bro. Maybe a little more.
Mm.
And I remember I didn't really want to be a king. So during this year, I basically wasn't a king. So I got to enjoy a life of not being a king. Right.
And so you're working, you're doing your own thing.
I started doing my own thing. I was still in the streets because I still hustled.
Right.
And I started hustling more. Like, I got on, bro. Right. I opened a business. I did my thing. Right. So long story short, about a year passes. That whole situation kind of obviously died down, went away. You know, life went on. Our Inca shows up, not Pauly though. G shows up. Pauly had gotten in a car accident. He was fucked up. Right. So G took over. Right. Officially, even though he was the boss already. So he shows up, like, listen, man, you're not on hold, you're not on investigation no more. That whole situation, that shit just like water under the bridge type of deal. Right. You back on status, you back on status, you gotta, you know, show up to meetings, you gotta show up to the hood, all that shit. Right?
Right.
He was like, G was like a smart dude, bro. Like, I could honestly say, like, in respect, like, he was a smart dude. He knew how to run the hood. He ran the hood with an iron fist. The time that I was a king, I seen maybe like, I haven't counted, but it was like 6, 7, maybe more different Incas, bro. He was one of the best Incas I ever seen. He was one of the most grimiest dudes I know, like snake type of dude. But in terms of like organization and management, he had them skills for real.
Right.
You know what I mean? So okay. When he ran the hood, he did a really great job at it.
Right. He understood what was necessary to keep the hood moving. Order. Right.
Moving, but also he loved, like, he was one of them dudes, like, he wanted the hood, his hood to be the best hood. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like he wanted other people to admire our hood, bro. You know what I mean?
Right.
He'd throw fundraisers. He organized parties to bring in money. He'd organize the box to bring in more money. And
was he an original from that hood, or was he a transfer?
He was originally back. He had been a king for like 20 years, bro, when I met him. So apparently he had been a king from our hood back in the day. And then he moved to another hood, like on a different side of Chicago, and ran a hood over there. And he was successful over there. And for whatever reason, he ended up coming back to our hood. But when he came back to our hood, he came back as the Inca, as the number one.
Okay, so bam. So he takes you off, you're off investigation. Now you're back active. What does that look like?
Well, immediately, like the way he did it, he was like, you're back active, you gotta go to the hood, you gotta put in work. I don't know if he heard or seen, but he was like, you're doing really good. Listen, I'm gonna give you a deal. I'm 19, bro, right? But I'm hustling hard. Like, I'm making good money, right?
Right.
So he seen that, knew that. So he was like, I'm gonna give you a deal though. I'm gonna put you on pay status though, right? Usually at that young, you're really not on pay status like that. There might've been one other dude that was on pay status like that.
Right. What is that? Explain what that is.
Okay. Pay status is basically you're gonna pay more than everybody else, right? But you don't have to put in work. You don't have to go on missions. You don't got to go to mandatory days. You don't really got to go to any juntas unless they need you there or it's mandatory. Like, what are the mandatory juntas?
Right. So pay status is basically a privilege, almost, I guess, like it'd be fair to say for older brothers. I think it's fair to say it's for older brothers primarily, right?
Primarily, it's focused for people that are like 25, 30, 40 years old, that got families or are like big time hustlers and they ain't got the time to be in the hood, bro. You know what I mean?
Right.
And depending on how hard you hustle and your situation depends how much you give. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like if you're selling a few hundred pounds, you got to give a few pounds, some guns, some extra money. If you're selling like 100 keys, like you got to give a lot more.
Right.
Just a family man, 9-to-5 dude, like your shit's not going to be as high as like versus some of that move mad work, but your shit's going to be higher than just a regular soldier. And they might ask a few other things of you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Whatever. But it just depends on your situation, your income and stuff like that. But pay status is like a really good status to be on. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I ended up on pay status and this dude that was like my best friend after Johnny left to Florida, because he ended up really going to Florida. Right.
Right.
Eventually, right?
Right.
This other dude that was part of our clique, he became like my boy, really close friend of mine. He was on pay status too, and he was really young like me. And basically I paid like I think like a pound or two a month, gave a few, maybe like 100, 200, maybe more. And really, really, at that time, they really wanted guns for me. So I'd find as many guns as I could, I'd give them to them.
Okay, so you're on pay status, right? Which is a privilege. That's probably feels pretty good. You ain't got to do all the extra shit. I'm guessing that didn't stay the same.
It didn't stay the same. So I'm on pay status for like a few months, bro. To me, it's great. I'm like, damn, I'm basically a king. I don't have to do nothing. I'm good, right? Well, what happened during that year, well, prior to do hit my boy Johnny hitting the 500 pounds, there had been an indictment, right, of this other king, this big king. He went down. He was a really big king. He went down for some keys, and he got snitched on by his girl, right?
Oh, okay.
He left his girl. His girl was salty. She snitched on him. He went to jail, right?
Okay.
Well, anyways, during the year I was in investigation, the dude Paulie, he owed a bunch of money to the king I'm talking about that got indicted. So when he got indicted and he snitched, his debt went away, bro. So imagine you owe me like 15, 20 G's. I'm a really big king. I can get you fucked up if you don't pay me. And like it's coming close to that because whatever reason you're fucking in default on your monthly payments to me for whatever drugs I'm in front of you.
Right.
But suddenly you get locked up and then you start cooperating. So like your debt is basically cleared. You know what I'm saying? Like you ain't going to pay a nigga that read it.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Right.
So So that had happened, but during the year I was gone, it had came out that the dude Pauly had convinced dude's girl, since he had left her for another woman, to convince his girl to snitch on him.
Oh, plot twist.
Plot twist. Well, one of my other guys at a party, right, and a related indictment, at a related indictment that has snatched up one of my other guys, right? Well, Pauly went to a party and seen him there, bro, right? He had been let out on a signature bond. If you've ever been to the feds or any of stuff like that, if you're a low-level dude on an indictment, right, they'll usually sometimes they let you out on a signature bond.
Right, right.
Doesn't mean you cooperated or nothing. It just means like you're not that big in the food chain. You're not
really, right. You're not a flight risk.
You're not a flight risk. You know, this wasn't like an indictment with murders. This was a solely drug-based DEA indictment.
Right.
And he wasn't a big dog in that indictment. So he got let out, and he happens to be at a party, and Pauly shows up, and Pauly was like, "Yo, why the fuck is you out? Didn't you just get indicted? But you snitching again?" And the dude, right, knew that Pauly had convinced the other dude that I was talking about that got locked up that he had convinced his girl to snitch on him. So he's like, "Motherfucker, you convince, let's just say her name's Amy. You convince Amy to snitch on her fucking man. You convince Amy to snitch on her man so you go to prison so you wouldn't have to pay that debt, nigga. You a fucking dry snitch, motherfucker."
Right.
That just at an open party, dog. So, like, this rumor starts going around, dog, right?
Mm.
It's going around for a while, right? Well, I'm back in the hood. I'm hearing about it. I know it's true, though, because I have spoken to Amy, right? And she told me straight up, like, "Yeah, I did do that to my man." Mm. But Pauly convinced me. Because once he left her and left her for no one, she started fucking Pauly. And then, you know what I'm saying? So it was like one of them situations. It was like,
right.
Really messy situation. That got messier in indictments. So anyway, so I'm like, "Damn, what the fuck?" So after that whole situation with Johnny Jack and the 500 pounds, me and Pauly fell out. Like, the nigga hated me, bro. Like, because he felt that he didn't even feel. He knew that I had covered for Scar. And because of me, so basically, because of me, he lost out on a bunch of money. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, he was a really vindictive dude, so he held that against me. And we were basically, like friend enemies. Like, that nigga was my enemy for real.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But mind you, like, I got money by this time, but the nigga got juice, right? And then he's, like, in a car accident. So he's like, he was fucked up because of that. I think he became more of a bitter person because of that. He used to kind of like be on when I first met him. He kind of fell off for whatever reason. And he was just a bitter dude, dog. Like, he started telling like girls that we knew in common, like that he was going to put sugar in one of my cars in the gas tank and that he was going to jack me for some work. And I'm like, and mind you, like, he's like our number two. So I'm like, this is what I'm on pay status, right?
Right.
Like, so it was like, kind of, it was going, like, my situation was going good, but it was kind of uncomfortable, like, in terms of like, damn, our number two is kind of like low key after me. Like,
right. And you know, it could go left at any point in time. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a fine line between everything being okay and then 2 seconds later and not, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
I start feeling situations in terms of like things he had said to me, like arguments we ended up getting into, other people started echoing them same thing.
Right. Right.
All right, man. So after listening to that, you know, obviously there's a little bit of shock factor when I think about, you know, everything that happened in that episode, man. You get a real understanding of how grimy and you know, almost life or death situations can be. I think one of the first things that stands out to me, man, is just how, you know, how guys can switch on you at the drop of a, you know, drop of a dime, man. Like it happened so fast. In the story, you know, when he talks about his friend, obviously, you know, robbing the pounds, and then, you know, that fast it turning into, you know, the Kings wanting to kill him. Like, that's pretty dramatic. You know what I mean? I mean, for a guy who didn't have necessarily bad strikes against him when it came to the nation, you know what I mean? Somebody that who was kind of, you know, he was in good standing, man. So for there to be that fast of a flip, you know, and not even like litigation, you know, so to speak, behind it, I think it was crazy. You know, I think that was probably one of the most glaring parts of the story to me, because, you know, these are guys that, you know, you stand in a circle with, but at the same time, you stand on the corner with, man, and you risk your life for every single day. You know, when you're going through it, you might not magnify it like that. You might not wear that on your sleeve like that because you're just living. But when you got a chance to step back and look and realize, like, man, you could die any day for these guys. And, you know, that kind of sacrifice shouldn't be taken lightly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so for them to turn their back on him, man, really without any kind of due process, you know, in my opinion, whether he was right or wrong, I feel like was really a crazy part of that story, man.
Do you think that whole aspect, can you see that putting yourself back in that, into that gang life back in your time? Could you see this happening? Or do you think like this was an eye-opening story to you? Like, I can't believe that they turned on him like that.
Well, I mean, it was eye-opening for sure, but could I see it happen in during our time? You know, as scary as it sounds to say, I can, but it would be coming from my circle, as crazy as that sounds, because we were the ones who had, you know, our claws sort of into the chapter, you know, towards the end of my reign. You know what I mean? So we were the ones dictating the terms, opposed to when we were coming up and somebody else was, you know, or in Steve's situation when he was just a soldier, you know. So yeah, I could see it happening, you know, but it would have had to have been some extreme circumstances just because we weren't those kind of guys. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We would have definitely gave the person their due process. But can I see it happening? Yeah. Like, I could see a lot of things being overlooked, you know, and sort of fair justice being overlooked, because that's just how it goes in these kind of situations, man. Like, as stand up as people want to make themselves seem and how they would do this or do that, man, you know, maybe in the moment, yeah, obviously I'm going to be prideful about my stance. But when you can speak retrospectively and have hindsight, and you got to be able to be humble and say, man, listen, nobody is really going to be 100% down the middle, man. Nobody is. And that's just being fair, calling balls and strikes. Nobody is going to be 100%. But he is that you have so much sway, you know, and when you're in leadership with your best friends, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes you'll get into a leadership role, and it might be a little bit scattered. Like when I first became the Kasinka, you know, Snuff was the Inca, you know what I mean? So he was our number one. And then I believe Fro ended up being our enforcer. Now Snuff is from the generation before me, and so is Fro, you know? So I ended up being the number two, and then Fro loses that spot, and the enforcer ended up being, it was somebody from our era. But my point is that, you know, once we got into, you know, all of us, you know, where it was, I was a Kasinka, Mondi was the Inca, you know, this was our era, our generation. Once it got to that point, man, we had a stronghold on it. We could really, you know, dictate what became a part of us and what didn't, you know what I'm saying? Or what flew and what didn't. And so in a situation like what happened in the interview, yeah, man, who knows, you know, let's just say you replace the characters, and let's just say Mondi, it happened to Mondi, you know, and, you know, Mondi's little brother was robbed or whatever the case is, you know what I mean? Yeah, I could see there being an issue if, let's just say, the person in this fictional story was similar to where, yeah, he was a good guy, but he's not a part of this ultimate circle. That type of shit happens, man. It just does. So
was there anything glaring that you got from this story where it's like, wow, I can't believe how different the Chicago world is from the Milwaukee world? Or does it sound pretty much the same thing? The biggest thing I think I took from it is that from the story, it sounded more like, for a lack of a better way of putting it, I feel like Chicago's like way more about the business, you know, like way more serious, where your generation, at least I shouldn't say all of Milwaukee, but your generation was much more of a group of friends, so to speak. I mean, you might've been doing Latin King things, but it
I don't think that's a fair assessment. And yeah. And because when 19th was established, man, you gotta remember it was built from people who were a part of almost the golden generation of Latin Kings, you know, the Cagos. It was built from guys that branched from Cago. So, you know, and then the generation they brought up, that definitely, I wouldn't consider it a group of friends, you know, it was built. There was free agents that were brought over. And then, so now if you're speaking about like what I was talking about, when we had it, when we became in power, the group of friends were, yeah, to some extent, you know, you got to remember it was me, you know, Mondi was the number one, I was the number two, but Payne was the number three. Payne was considered a one of us, but you got to remember our closest would have been like me and Tim and Toot. They just didn't get the votes. You know, they had votes, but they just didn't get the amount of votes at that time. And so, you know, we were really the core, but you got to remember we were surrounded by other guys that weren't necessarily, I guess, what you consider, you know, the group of friends that you're referring to. Like, you know, like Gordy and Mike and all them dudes that came after Mario and Los and, you know, all them dudes they came after and they were, you know, obviously they were, it's sad to say, representation of us, you know, but they weren't exactly, you know, that dynamic where we would consider it like just super close bond. You know what I mean? Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think probably the reason why I got that vibe from it was just because a lot of your story circle around that big circle of friends. So it felt like the whole game, like 19th Street was all that tight, but
that's true.
Just that little circle that was
right. Tight. That's true. But to strengthen your point, 100%, there's a magnified difference in our setting compared to his, in the sense that the sheer numbers are just different. And so the dynamic is different because of how this is what blew my mind, of how they didn't even, the guys in the circle, by the chapter being such a big size chapter, the guys in the circle didn't even know, I'm drawing a blank on this guy's name, didn't even know the guy, obviously, that got Steve out of trouble.
Okay, yeah.
I'm drawing a blank on his name. But but they didn't even know that he had been in prison around, you know, the old man Tino. They didn't, you know, like, and the ones that did, obviously, they were probably on his side. But in the chapter of that size, not everybody knew everything about everybody, if that makes sense. And it wasn't like that for us. Even though we had like different groups within our chapter who hung out, we still knew everything about everybody just because we weren't that huge, bro. You know what I'm saying? We were, and so I think that definitely was an eye opener for me. And then the overall maturity of their chapter was far supreme than ours, you know. And obviously that's for obvious reasons, because we had gotten to a point where we were all young, still just basically holding the chapter. But, you know, in the beginning, we were comparable. I can say, you know, when Champ and those guys were still around, we were comparable. But towards the end, obviously, it was pale in comparison. And I could tell just by the, you know, the almost the quote unquote professionalism of how they ran, you know, having guys on pay status and just the dynamic of bringing money to the neighborhood, just, you know, how the maturity of their chapter was light years ahead of ours.
Right. You know what I mean? Which is reasonable, because I mean, that chapter had probably been around for a much longer time than what, right, say 19th Street was, or beyond that, just Latin Kings in Chicago are probably, I mean, better structured or more mature in their structure than any Milwaukee, just because, I mean, they've been around forever, you know?
Right. Right. And you know, they have, with anything, it's in the, just speaking what it is, his hood was in, it's in the motherland, you know what I mean? So, you can get a surprise visit from, anybody who really, really has status and power. And so you kind of want to be organized and at attention, you know, at all times when you're in those kind of situations. You know, it wasn't really like that in Milwaukee. Like, guys would give you a heads up when this guy's coming or that guy's coming. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean? And so it just was a different atmosphere. You know, there's a couple other things that similarities going forward into the next part of the interview, I think people will definitely be like, man, that sounds like it's a common theme, you know, and that's like the power tripping, ego tripping, and how that goes when people got status. And we get into some characters that, you know, are pretty, you know, a lot like, they're like that a lot. And so I think, you know, to be able to compare and contrast, because I've talked about those guys a lot. So it's pretty crazy, man. Guys get up in the food chain and you know, they really push that power around. And, you know, in the closing interview with Steve, I think there'll be a lot of that going on.
So one more question for you along the comparison lines. Do you prefer where you were, or would you have preferred the Chicago Latin Kings, do you think? I mean, taking aside of the, I mean, I'm sure you probably would answer that I would rather have not been in the Latin Kings, but yeah, given the two choices, which one, hearing that story, do you think, like, I'm glad I was where I was at, or?
Well, I mean, you know, I guess it's a hard comparable, man, because it would, like, would I be with my guys over there? You know, like with my brother over there, or are you just picking me up and putting me over?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
So let's say Tim, Toot, and Mondi, whoever else you would really group into that inclusive group, goes with you. So you don't lose that at all.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you lose that, the choice is obvious.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right. I think, being honest, bro, like, I love Milwaukee, man. You know, like, I take pride in being from 19th Street, you know. I always did, even though a true king would never do that, right? Because it's supposed to be the nation over any chapter. Mm-hmm. But just naturally, man, people, that's just how people are. I don't care who you ask. At some point, they're going to bring up their first hood or whoever whatever part made them. But with that being said, man, you know, with my guys, I would, you know, I would have went anywhere. And so I think it would have been cool to be, you know, in that kind of situation where, you know, you're around a bunch of different guys. And you got to remember, man, there's so many kings in Chicago. I think that, mm-hmm, that dynamic. Now, yeah, your level of living and dying is obviously challenged even more so, you know, living over there. Not saying we didn't live life or death every day, but I know over there, obviously, it magnifies. I will say this: the one thing about Chicago that's different is that they do have established neighborhoods, and so, yeah, people, you get killed in your neighborhood for sure. But, you know, a lot of times people are killed, they're outside of their neighborhood, you know, going somewhere, mm-hmm, and you know, we couldn't really be in our neighborhood for the majority of my career. It's a trade off, man. I think I would like it just to say, yeah, man, it's the motherland. Who wouldn't want that, you know? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, you're proud where you came from too, you know? So,
but there's nothing within that made you, like, look at it and say, wow.
No, because
it's a scary world compared to where I was. It's
Nah, because you know what? Because you run into shady characters or dudes that are willing to do shit that no matter where you're at, you know? Like, we had a reign for a while when it was Jay and Dre, you know, and they showed a lot of sketchy characteristics. You know, it's just they didn't have a long run. So who knows what type of things they were capable of, you know, having that position had they been out for a longer time. You know, you got to remember, that's another thing too, is that sometimes these kings that got spots in Chicago, they're shielded because, you know, that's the idea. You want your guys in position to be out, you know, to run a good hood and all that, you know. So they're shield. It wasn't really like that in Milwaukee because there's not enough kings for the guys to, you know, these guys that were, our Incas and Kasinkas are active. You know what I mean? Like, I caught my murder when I was a Kasinka. So, like, you know, but in Chicago, that's another difference. You know, their guys in position are going to be shielded. They're going to be put up for the most part. You know, had Jay and Dre not been idiots and they stayed out longer, who knows what kind of bullshit they would have been capable of. I mean, you talking about Jay, man, we talk about all the foul shit he did as a king, just, you know, reeks of, you know, just hypocrisy and slime ball shit. You know what I mean? Anybody that's listened to the podcast would know, you know, he's got a lot of bad bones within himself to this day. And Dre too, you know, just calling it what it is. Dre too, man. You know, Dre did a lot of foul shit he probably regrets at this point, you know, but I'm sure he felt he was doing the right thing at that time, but definitely did a lot of foul shit. And so imagine if those dudes were out for a longer period of time. They were out for maybe a summer together, man. You know what I mean? Like, that's how short lived those guys were out together. You know what I mean? So imagine if they did 6 months or a year, them dudes could have did some serious damage to the nation because, you know, they were so power driven, so ego driven. You know, they would have either drove a lot of brothers away or guys would have wanted to take them out. One of the two. Yeah. Nothing really scared me away, man. Cause I know that, you know, guys are capable of that shit. And it's not like, you know, those guys down there couldn't reach up to where I was at. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we were inactive.
Yeah, but down there, you're in the thin and thick of it. You know, like you're in the day-to-day activities of it, which is a way different than having 2 hours between you. Yeah, they could come up to you, but you know, probably weren't going to do that. There was a whole lot more of them happening down there than coming to Milwaukee. So,
yeah, no. When I say... I'm saying having access to guys like that, you know, at the end of the day, we all bleed blood, bro. Like it was never like we didn't look at those guys in awe. You know what I mean? Like they're still sucking wind like we are, bro. There was nothing about that element that scared us. I mean, we were living day to day either way. You know what I'm saying? So whether we were living day to day at our pace or at their pace, it was still day to day. We were still going to shoot if we got shot at. And, you know, that was just the way of life. Yeah, I understand from the outside now you can say, damn, their pace was a lot faster, you know, and they probably lost a lot more guys, you know, in a shorter period of time than we ever would have, you know, just being fair. Like it's not even the sheer numbers are not even comparable.
Right.
But I'm just saying lifestyle in general, bro, you can't really, for an individual person that's walking around looking over his shoulder every day with a gun on his waist, got to shoot to survive. You don't think, damn, it could get worse. You know what I'm saying? You know, you just hoping to make it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the element. That's how it goes.
So, all right. Well, do you got anything else for this one?
No, that's good, man. That's good. I hope everybody enjoyed and look forward to the next part.
Yeah. So we will be back in 2 weeks with the second part of this episode. And as always, we do have an email address if you want to contact us, normalizedcrime@gmail.com, as well as Patreon is still out there, patreon.com/normalizedcrime. And we will be back next week with a Patreon episode and 2 weeks with a regular episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
Peace.